2016 on the East Coast in these formerly United States of America. Stratfor, the think tank, which has obvious ties to American intelligence communities, says this about Ukraine. Take it with a grain of salt. The conflict in eastern Ukraine is likely to turn into a frozen conflict. So says Stratfor. And it added that the differences in interpretation of the Minsk agreements between Russia, local militias on the one side, and Ukraine and the West on the other, will prevent a broader political and military settlement from being reached in 2016. I would disagree with the labels used in that paragraph. There really are no Minsk agreements being adhered to by the Kiev regime, put in there by American tax dollars and overseen by the internationalist globalist fascists who are running much of the planet now. So let's go to East Ukraine right now, to Donbass, and in particular to the city of Donetsk, the beautiful city of Donetsk, and talk to an American who has put his life on the line to help these wonderful people in their battle for independence from tyranny. And that's exactly what it is, with Russian support, moral and otherwise, and their own fighting spirits and their love of freedom. They have withstood an awful lot and continue to be shelled on a daily basis, shot at, and they are, in my book, as good as it gets. Russell Bentley is standing by there from Austin, Texas, now from Donetsk, Ukraine, East Ukraine, free Ukraine. Russell, are you there?
I sure am, Jeff. Happy New Year and good morning to you. It's about 7 a.m. here in Donetsk.
Well, I'm glad I didn't get you up any earlier than that. That's good. All right. Yep. Let me start out by doing a little recap of our last visit. We're going to stay with Russell throughout the coming months and God knows how long until this is finally settled and the people in the East have officially, formally, and forever their freedom from the creeps in Kiev. And they are really very ugly people, Porky and the Rat and all the rest of them, the oligarchs and others. You mentioned last time that you're now beginning to see and get reports of ISIS, ISIL, or Daesh fighters coming into the south near Mariupol. Do you have any more confirmation on that? This is very bothersome.
It is pretty bothersome. I can't really say too much about it other than the DNR intelligence has confirmed reports that the ISIS and ISIL fighters that are running away from the
Russian Air Force that they're running from.
Yeah. And they are being shipped to Odessa, which is under the heel of Mikhail Saakashvili, ridiculous criminal.
A lunatic. He's a criminal lunatic.
He's been appointed to the governorship of the state of Odessa, and they're bringing in shiploads of fighters.
Hold on a second. Sure, go ahead. Yeah. Saakashvili is the former head of Georgia who, when the Russians were invading, was seen on television chewing on his necktie. And the guy is nuts.
No, he really is, and he's a real bad criminal, too. He's involved in some of the most hideous stuff you could imagine.
I believe it.
In Odessa, they have had scores of children go missing there, mostly girls, mostly from some as young as 5 years old, but like up to mid-teens, they disappear off the streets.
Human trafficking, sex trafficking. They're kidnapped. They're just picked up. A van stops, people run out, grab them, and they're gone, never to be seen again. It's horrible. It happens here, but not that often. The country is being raped, literally and figuratively. It's just being looted of its human wealth, as you're mentioning there, young people, and every other thing you can think of. It's so ugly. That's why it's so important that we support people in the Donbass and especially Donetsk and Lugansk and all the other little communities, little villages that are paying terrible prices for this. The shooting is continuing, at least from what I can determine over here.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I mean, in fact, the OSCE, the European Organization for Security, that has monitors here, the Ukrainian army shot at them last week while they were, like, at the front lines, supposedly investigating some earlier artillery attacks.
Uh-huh.
I mean, so these guys are so crazy, they're shooting at, and really the OSCE is not highly regarded here in the DNR. They seem to, well, first of all, they stay in the fanciest hotels in Donetsk. They spend a lot of time in the bar there. They're not very good tippers from what we hear. And and they, you know, they, if nothing's going on, then they stay in the hotel and say, hey, nothing's going on. If the Ukrainians start shooting at us, then they say, oh, we can't go there. It's too dangerous. They're shooting.
Another phony Band-Aid they've thrown at you. It's just nothing.
Yeah, but even they are getting shot at by these, Pravi Sector and Azov Battalion Nazis, you know. I mean, they're really just like groups of bandits, you know. They're private armies.
Uh-huh.
They're really not under the control of the so-called Ukrainian Kiev government or anybody else. They, you know, they're neo-Nazis that have been given heavy weapons and just basically turned loose.
Sick, really sick. This Saakashvili, I don't understand that. What's the deal? What's the inside track on why Porky would put this guy in charge of Odessa? I don't understand it.
Because Saakashvili has already proven that he is willing to do anything.
He's willing to follow
orders from his masters, and it doesn't matter if they tell Saakashvili to burn the city of Odessa to the ground, he'll do it no problem, you know. So it's, you know, he's just... He's somebody that's proven how completely criminal and evil he is, so his masters are like, oh, we got this guy in our pocket. And that's,
got it. Well,
I mean, certainly it isn't because of his diplomatic skills or his intellect or his charming good looks.
Well, I understand now better. This is sickening. What about the oligarchs, especially the one... with the beard. I can't remember his name right now.
Kolomoisky.
That's it. Kolomoisky. What's his trip? What's he up to?
He's probably, in my opinion, the worst of them all. I mean, you know, worse than Poroshenko or Yatsenyuk. I mean, those guys are really just, flunkies.
Right.
But Kolomoisky, he's a billionaire. He made his money robbing resources from Ukraine after the fall of the Soviet Union. And he is the sponsor of Azov Battalion.
Is he? That's
Battalion.
I see.
Uh-huh. It's crazy because, this guy's Jewish, and yet he has battalions of Nazis working for him, you know?
Yeah, well, evil is evil. I don't care what
that's
label
it.
You hang on it.
That's it, and he is 100%. And, I mean, you know, and you look at his picture, and he looks like a little teddy bear or something, but, I mean, he's... He is like the devil, dude. He is completely 100% evil.
I see a killer when I look at that face. That's what I see. I see evil. I see Porky on steroids.
yeah, that's about it, man.
Okay. Now, as far as the current military situation, the last time we talked, you expressed real confidence. And it may be because of a lack of cohesiveness in terms of the Kiev military, such as it is, but you feel still, I guess, that you guys can hold your own.
Yes, yes, I do. I mean, and of course, this is my only personal opinion.
Yeah.
But I have been to the front, pretty much at least once a week. I go somewhere, where you can. Almost throw hand grenades at the Ukrainian army, and our guys, I mean, we now, everybody in the DNR army right now is a seasoned combat veteran. We are, you know, we have been doing this for well over a year now.
Uh-huh.
We are highly motivated. We are well trained. We are well equipped. And, you know, we're defending our own homes and our own families here. So,
yeah.
You know, there's no retreat. There's no surrender. And the Ukrainian army and the Nazi battalions, they know this, dude. They really, really don't want to mess with us. You know,
I believe that. I absolutely believe that. And that does kind of resonate a little bit with what Stratfor says, although I don't trust Stratfor very far either. But they say it could be a long-term frozen conflict. That does not mean there won't be shooting, fighting, people dying, but it means that there won't be a clear objective taken stance achievable by Kiev. They're just not going to do it. It isn't going to happen.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. I mean, first of all, Stratfor, I remember they're also based out of Austin, Texas, my old hometown.
Yes, they are.
When Anonymous pulled their pants down a few years back, hacked all their emails and posted everybody's name and all their techniques and stuff.
Uh-huh,
so that was
uh-huh.
pretty funny.
Yeah.
But I think they might have a pretty good take on this situation. I mean, the Ukrainian army cannot defeat us. They know that. It's also interesting, just this last week, Vladimir Putin came out and he said something that was needed a little bit of interpretation. But what he said was, he said, the Russian Federation is not going to allow the Russian people, Russian-speaking people of Southeast Ukraine to be eaten up by Ukrainian nationalists.
I ran the story. I thought the words were marvelous to read. Mm-hmm. I don't even need to read between the lines. I mean, the man is a man of his word. When he says something, you can take it to the bank if you want to go anywhere near banks anymore.
Yeah.
But he means what he says.
Yeah, and I think it's funny, too, because this choice of words, I think that also might have been maybe kind of a veiled insinuation
yeah.
about these ISIS guys coming from Syria to Odessa.
Oh, okay, there's an angle. Yeah, he knows. He is so smart. He knows exactly what's going on there. They have Russian intelligence there. You've got your own groups. There are no secrets, I wouldn't think, anywhere in Odessa to speak of. You know what's going on down there. This is all very disheartening. You got to think of the people there who had earlier expressed obvious desire to join the DPR or DNR, whichever it is, and Lugansk. I don't know. They want their freedom. They know.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I got to tell you, last night I was spent the evening with the Sud Vremeni Information Service here, our combat units up on the front lines, and some of them are behind the Ukrainian lines. But the information unit, we had us a little New Year's Eve dinner last night, and at midnight, Vladimir Putin came on and gave, like, his New Year's message.
Yeah.
It is such a refreshing and strange sensation to see a president and feel proud. You know, I mean, Obama, you know, I never thought there could be a worse president than George Bush Jr., but Obama has proved me wrong. But now in this new country, dude, watching Zakharchenko, watching Vladimir Putin, it makes me really proud, man. I know that we're on the right side here. I know that we're the good guys here.
Absolutely. And I was so proud of his New Year's Eve remarks that I read half of them on the air.
Nice.
An hour ago or so. Yeah, they were spoken by just a great human being. He is.
Yeah, he really is. You know, and he's good-hearted, but he's also
tough. You got to be tough.
He's tough. You know, I mean, and him being an expert in judo. You know, I mean, judo is the most elegant of the martial arts because, you know, it's all counterpunching. You know, you wait until somebody tries to hit you or grab you, and then you take them down. You know,
that describes his general philosophy and what he's done. And it's really a tragedy for me to even watch this alleged government over here flail around with no cohesive foreign policy, having lost all those young men and women's lives, and I'm not just talking about just American lives, all lives in Afghanistan, they've lost. It's over. What they did, what this government did to Iraq is one of the most barbaric criminal acts in human modern history.
That's true. And you know something I wanted to mention, too, about Afghanistan that reminds me, Jeff, we were, the other day we were out making a video, and we were watching the military and police dogs being trained.
Uh-huh.
And these dogs, their main job is to look for booby traps and mines. The Ukrainian terrorists, frequently they will mine the civilian roads and trails near the front. So we send these dogs out to find the mines or the booby traps, but they also are trained to look for drugs. And, you know, when 90% of the opium in the world that becomes heroin is grown in Afghanistan, and it's the U.S. government and NATO, they may not control the backwoods, but they control the borders and they control, you know, Kabul. So, you know, the U.S. government is the biggest heroin dealer in the world. And, I mean, right after the Maidan, there was a shipment of 150 kilos of heroin going from Ukraine into Poland. And these guys, that's one of the ways they finance their crimes is by heroin. I mean, the same thing with ISIS. They make, supposedly, UN estimates $1 billion a year off of heroin. You know, not to mention all the oil that they steal.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So, you know, it's like we're here. We're trying to make the world a better place. Heroin doesn't make anything better. And so we're trying to stop these guys from getting it, at least into our country.
That's right. No, the people who are running the show in the West and Ukraine are dealing in death and destruction and grief. That's what they are. I don't know what you hear, but the good Ukrainian people, the people that understand that they are really under the boot of American and globalist fascism, they must be just miserable. A lot of these guys in the Ukrainian army are draftees, I understand. I don't know how many tens of thousands fled when they put out the draft from Kiev, but a lot of them did, and I think a lot of them are draftees.
Yeah, that's a fact. That is a fact. They've had like five rounds of conscription. You know, they're drafting guys up in the Ukrainian army. They're drafting people up to 60 years old. So that shows how desperate they are.
Oh, man. Yeah, okay. When we talked last, you mentioned that you thought when the ground froze, there would begin to be more activity, probing activity perhaps. What are your thoughts now and your fellow soldiers about a mass attack or probing attacks? What kind of tactics do you expect?
Well, I think we're going to get continue to get more of these probing attacks. As far as the mass attack, I think that that's probably on hold indefinitely after Putin's remarks last week. I mean, basically, I think what he was saying is, I mean, because the military strategy that they tried before would be to encircle the cities of Lugansk and Donetsk, and then lay siege to them, seal the border. But the Ukrainian army would have to go south of those two cities, Lugansk and Donetsk, to encircle them, and that puts them right up on the Russian border. And I think basically what Putin at least implied to anyone that has the good sense to listen to him is that if that really happens, if the cities of Lugansk and Donetsk are encircled and laid siege to, that the Russian army is going to step in if it becomes a huge attack like that, you know. And we can see from Syria that when the Russian army steps in, they step hard.
The other thing, and it's interesting, is the Russians have a technology that is second to none. There are arguments about who's better, the U.S. or Russia. I would bet on the Russians having the advance and the edge technologically. They could actually fight on your behalf without stepping foot in Ukraine. They've got the Iskander missile. They've got everything. They don't have to send the army in, although I do believe you're correct that they would if it was necessary.
Yeah. We know, I'm sure you've heard a story about the USS Donald Cook a couple of years ago in the Black Sea.
Yeah, tell it to our listeners. This is a good one.
It's pretty funny. The Donald Cook, known among Navy personnel as the Donald Duck, is a missile frigate. It came into the Black Sea really against... you know, normal diplomatic protocols. And it was, you know, I mean, it's like a ship that's able to fire nuclear-tipped cruise
right.
missiles.
Right.
And so its presence in the Black Sea near Crimea was a real menacing gesture. And so one morning they're cruising around, and then here comes Russian jet fighter. They see it on the radar coming in to approach. It flies by, and it flies by within visual range, and they can see what they call that its wings were clean. It was not armed with any bombs or any missiles, but it flew by, and then all of a sudden, the entire Aegis radar system, the most advanced Western radar fire control system, went completely blank. And this Russian airplane, then proceeded for the next hour to make 12, you know, simulated bombing runs against this ship that was completely defenseless. And then, and then it flew away. And the Donald Duck, which became a sitting duck in the Black Sea,
yeah.
immediately headed to Romania, made port, and then a couple of days later, skedaddled out of the Black Sea as quickly as it could. And so, I mean, the Russians... You know, they have some stuff up their sleeve. A little bit of it is getting shown in Syria now. I mean, they say in Syria that the Russians have the ability to blank out any radar within 600 kilometers. And that's a pretty hefty ability right there, considering that, you know, all U.S. Modern technology requires, electronics and radars and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, that's a very... important lesson that Russell just told us about, and we did run the story. It didn't get much play here for obvious reasons, but I did run one story about that. That ship was neutralized. It was a floating graveyard for its crew. They had no ability to do anything. So heavily dependent on electronics are they, and so talented are the Russians in being able to shut it all down. Gone. Just gone. Couldn't do a thing. All right, hold on, Russell. We have to pause for a couple minutes. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Okay, and we're back live to Donetsk, Ukraine, East Free Ukraine, in the east, in the Donbass, the wonderful area of that country that sought, voted for its independence from the corrupt Kiev regime. There's a story in Sputnik, I ran it a couple days ago. Russell, it's kind of interesting. The title is, U.S. Military Outclasses Russia's in Only One Area. And I said, well, what the hell would that be? So I clicked on it, and the one area that the U.S. military outclasses Russia in is corruption.
Oh, sure. Sure, of course, man. I mean, when you think that the Russian military budget is about $60 billion a year, I believe, and the U.S. Military budget that is... not concealed is $600 billion.
Correct.
And, that's an insane amount of money, and it gets so wasted. You know, American defense contractors, they don't make good weapons. They make expensive weapons. And so, you know, it's not a question of getting what you paid for if you're buying it from a snake oil salesman or a con man, which is what these defense companies really are these days. They're getting rich off of war.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, they're crooks. And, you know, I mean, the U.S. Spends 10 times what Russia does, but, you know, anybody that thinks the U.S. can beat the Russians in any kind of serious conflict is just insane, insane.
Well, you've summed it up. I couldn't say it better. Here's another story. As you know, over here, Obama, the worst president in American history, and I agree with you on that, obviously the biggest liar, their number one agenda is to disarm the American public, take the guns away or make them virtually inaccessible through illegal and unconstitutional executive orders. These are not constitutional. And you've been over there now, and you see how crucial it is for the civilians to be armed. What would you say to Americans who might not be off the fence yet, they're still a little unsure about the right to bear arms and all of that? What would you tell Americans?
Well, I think that there's no question that the government is trying to take away the guns. And they have been for a long time. And I want to say this, and this is something very important, kind of a litmus test. The government of the United States doesn't have to take the guns away. There are like 300 million guns in the United States. But what they will do when they start really getting serious about this, they'll just start taking the bullets away. They'll make it impossible for people to buy ammunition. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, a gun, you can make a shotgun from the hardware store for $20 worth of plumbing supplies, but it's pretty hard to make a shotgun shell from scratch. So the thing to watch out for is when they start, you know, prohibiting bullets, or like I think in Chicago, trying to tax, you know, bullets,
right?
You know, out of, you know, something like that. That's what you watch out for. Armed population is really, as our forefathers intended in the Constitution, is the check on the ultimate tyranny of our governments. And the people here in Donetsk, we started out as a people's militia. When the fascists first started coming to the southeast, you know, civilians stood there. I'm sure you've seen the videos. They put their hands on the front of the tanks and the BMPs.
Yeah.
They tried to stop armored vehicles with their bare hands. That didn't work. So from there, it was like Molotov cocktails and knives and shotguns and hunting rifles. And now we have an army that can defend our land and our families, and we will do that. It's, you know, if you trust your government, then, you know, don't worry about it. You know, you don't need to have a gun. If you are realistic about what the U.S. government is doing, then, you know, start buying more bullets and keep your gun clean.
But the best thing you can tell people, seriously, is to buy ammunition. There was an effort a couple of years ago, not even, I think a little over a year ago, where the feds wanted each round to have a code, a serial number on it, so they could track each round of ammunition. This is madness. They gave it up. Too many rounds. So, yeah, I don't have to tell anyone out there who is Second Amendment backer that you got to buy ammunition, put it away as much as you can. That's the best advice. Now China is another one that is constantly building state-of-the-art weaponry. They are building their new fifth generation fighter. Now it's going to be as good as anything we have, primarily because they back engineered everything we have, either directly or they steal it. There are so many Asians over here now, Chinese university students. They work in the defense intelligence communities, and they have an allegiance, and that allegiance is to China. Do you have any Asian influence in the East at all that you've seen so far? I'm just curious if China has made any presence or anything known about their feelings.
I wouldn't really say necessarily like the Chinese government or, you know, a lot of like, you know, ethnically Chinese people. There's a fair amount of Siberians here, Uyghurs, that are, you know, similar features to
Asians. Right. Yeah, they're Asian.
The very far east of Russia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're, and they're great guys and good fighters too. There's people from all over the world that are here helping out.
Isn't that that's so heartening to hear? Like, you have gone over there, some other Americans have gone over there, and it's for a noble and just cause. It's to fight evil. That's really what it's all about. And
It really is. And, you know, I got to tell you, man, recently, I mean, with the really heavy fighting kind of slowing down, I've had a chance to not only fight evil, but to do some good. And I'd like to just mention yesterday, Sued Vremini Information Service and Humanitarian Aid, we went out to the little town of Iznavata, which is a town that's got a place in my heart. It's where I did my basic training for Vostok Battalion a year ago.
Uh-huh.
They suffered a lot of heavy shelling, diversants, Ukrainian hit squads going through, just basically killing civilians and stuff a year and a half ago. And we went out there yesterday to help this girl, a little 12-year-old girl named Sophie. She has cerebral palsy and a heart condition. She was doing much better before the war started under medical treatment. She was able to walk and stuff like that. But since the war started, they were, they had to leave Iznavata for a while, her family.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're back. And we took her some furniture yesterday so she can continue to go to school. I mean, she's a beautiful girl, brilliant, a great artist. Speaks English.
Nice.
She's only 12 years old. I mean, imagine how many 12-year-old American kids that aren't like ethnically Russian, you know, have learned to speak Russian, you know. I mean, she's a brilliant kid, beautiful, and we're going to help her out. She needs one more operation to be able to, she's had three, she needs one more to be able to like walk normally. And her parents were telling me about this yesterday. It's going to cost, this operation, and this is interesting, this operation is going to cost 60,000 rubles.
Mm.
And that's about $500, bro. Mm. Imagine getting, I mean, if you go to a hospital in the United States, you can't even get a splinter taken out with tweezers for $500.
You got it. All right. Well, listen, I have to take a break. We'll come right back. And okay. maybe... there's a Santa listening who can donate to your website. We'll
sure.
tell them how to get there and to help this little girl. That would be amazing. So she's learned English. Wow. All right, hold on, Russell. We'll come right back.
You bet.
Okay, and we're back. Now, we're talking live to Free Ukraine in the East, in the Donbass, to Donetsk, where Russell Texas Bentley is there, doing humanitarian work in addition to putting his life on the line for these people. The humanitarian work, you go to his website, you can see videos. There'll be more coming, and we'll be tracking this story for as long as necessary with Russell. As an ambassador of what America is really all about. Give us the site URL that you prefer.
Okay,
which one?
It's www.russelltexasbentley.com. And that's Russell, two S's, two L's, and Bentley, like the car.
Got it. Okay. So if anyone wants to help, every penny actually will be multiplied a number of times, and it will go to the people who need it. He had a video up last week, or he's on the front line, literally, with a... How many kids were in that? There were eight kids
in Elena's family in Gorlovka that we took some humanitarian aid to, and we will be going back to visit them again. Actually, in Russian Orthodox Church, Christmas is celebrated on the 7th
yeah.
of January.
Yes, yes, I know, it's coming up.
We're doing a lot of humanitarian work. Elena and her family and the eight kids, it's actually three families living in one house right there on the front, I mean, literally on the front lines.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Gunshots going off 100 yards away, maybe.
Yep.
Just crazy.
And then, we really want to help Sophia out. I mean, $500 to get an operation so that will allow a little girl to actually walk. That's a no-brainer there. You know, it's the operations are in Tula, Russia, and we're going to...
All right, well, let's make this happen. If everybody can just pitch in $10, we've got it easy.
Yeah. Easy. And certainly, it's $500 for the operation, and then probably maybe another $500 for the transportation there and back, and food and lodging and stuff while they're there. So really, that's some. I mean, and we've been doing a lot of humanitarian work. I do have on my website a donation page. We have PayPal. Also, Western Union Works in Rostov, Russia. People have been very generous. We've gotten some people that have made some very, very generous donations. We use that money. It's how I live. I did get paid the other day from Han Battalion, which was kind of manna from heaven. I was surprised to see it because I don't live at the barracks anymore, although I guess I'm still officially a member of the Han Spetsnaz Battalion. But I haven't gotten paid the last couple of months. And then just yesterday, somebody called up and said, hey, go pick up your 15,000 rubles, which is about $250 a month is what the soldiers get here. Huh. And I went and got it. And so I was really happy when we went to his Nevada and saw Sophie. I took 5,000 rubles out of my, that's 10 days pay. And I gave that as the first 5,000 rubles toward Sophie's operation.
Wow. Nice.
I get a little bit of money from the Army still, but mostly I'm supported by donations from people around the world that, like seeing my videos, like my work here. I also support the Suit Vremeni, the Essence of Time information service with these donations. And we do a lot of humanitarian work. I mean, sometimes soldiers, go back home for a couple of months or something. I mean, guys that have been at the front line for a year,
mm-hmm.
and help them out some with a little bit of traveling money.
Sure,
a lot of civilians and stuff. And so we do a lot of good humanitarian work here, as well as the information warfare, getting the truth out. And I really want to thank everyone that's contributed. It's important work, and we couldn't do it without you. And contributing is a way to be part of this work and be part of our team.
Okay, the people in Donetsk right now, how are they doing? They've lost a lot of loved ones. Just a couple of days ago, some artillery was fired in your direction. One mm-hmm. woman, service, I don't know if she was an officer or enlisted in the military, was killed. Two civilians were killed. A lot of people have suffered there. How are they doing, Russell?
The people of Donetsk and the DNR, the Donetsk People's Republic, are an example to the whole world. They have it tough here. I mean, it's a lot better than it was a year ago when I first got here.
Uh-huh.
But that don't mean it's easy. And the people here, They're brave, they're strong, they're good-hearted, they help each other out. I mean, they're really an example to the world, and I'm so proud of my new home and the people who live here. And they, when times get tough, that's what really shows, that's when people's true characters come out.
Oh, yeah.
And this is what I'm seeing here, is that there's good, good people here. And even though times are tough, even though there's still a lot of rebuilding and serious work to be done, I went to Lenin Square last night for New Year's Eve, and it was a huge party. And, everybody, I mean, Russians know how to work, they know how to fight, and they know how to have a good time, too. And last night, everybody kind of, for a couple of hours at least, had a celebration.
Very nice. Very nice.
Dancing and singing. It was really, really cool.
Very good. What about the airport there, Russell? Is it open for any business at all, or too dangerous still?
No, I mean, the airport is completely it's completely blown to pieces, Jeff. I mean, it is completely destroyed. What's left will have to be torn down before they can even begin to rebuild. I mean, so there's absolutely no aviation traffic coming in or out of there. I mean, also the Ukrainian army, we did take the airport back from them. We have pushed them back a few kilometers, but they're still close enough to the airport in Spartak that, you know, they shoot at the new terminal, you know, not, if not every day, every other day for sure. So it's still a very hot, dangerous area.
And I got
there's going to be a lot of work to be done once this conflict gets over just to rebuild.
Okay. All right. We just have another minute or so left. What did we miss that needs to be said here? And then we'll say goodnight for this visit.
Okay. And first of all, thanks again for having me on again, Jeff. I look forward to it very much. And hopefully we can keep doing this on a semi-regular basis.
You bet.
Just that, I mean, right now, it's the week before Russian Christmas, so if people want to donate, we got a lot of humanitarian work that we can be doing. There's a lot of good causes. You can go to my Facebook page, Russell B. Bentley. You can go, I'm on VContact, too, Donbas Tejas. You know, I mean, it's you can just Google my name and, you know, and you can find out how to contact me. Check out some of these videos we're making, the Suit Vremeni Essence of Time Information Service. They're doing great work here. We got a new program, Donbas with Russell Bentley, coming out. And, you know, we're doing a lot of information work, but right now our main focus is going to be on humanitarian work. People want to pitch in a little something, help us do that. Just, I mean, go to my Facebook page and look at these kids, you know, putting a smile on their faces. It's heartwarming, and it's something that we want to do as much of as we can. It doesn't take a lot to help a lot here.
I understand. Well, I'm speaking for a lot of people. I'm very, very proud of you representing the good people of this country, showing those folks what it's like to be a real American, a hero.
Well, so I don't consider myself a hero. I'm just a regular guy, you know. I'm just doing, you know, I guess I'm just putting my money where my mouth is, you know. I mean, it's, you know, talk is cheap, and, you know, people can either talk the talk or walk the walk. So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
And I want to say this too, Jeff. It's this last year here has been the toughest year of my life, but it has also been the best year of my life. I am so happy. You know, coming here was like, you know, jumping off a cliff with my eyes closed, but I didn't know what was going to happen, but I came here. Courage is the key to happiness, my brother. That is the key to happiness. And so, you know, just pitch in, do the right thing. Don't be afraid, you know, and that's what I've learned. And this has been the best year of my life. And I've had some good times, but this has been the best.
That's
and I'm
great.
So happy here.
Well, Russell, thank you. We'll talk again soon. You take care. Happy New Year and Merry Russian Christmas to you as well.
Спасибо, братан. And thank you very much, Jeff. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and all your listeners, too.
Okay. You be well. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Russell, TexasBentley.com. Drop by and drop him a note. He is representing the best of what we are supposed to be. Okay. It's the end of the year. It's our last program of 2015. Goodbye. And 2016 has already begun in the east of this country. And no matter what religion you are, or even if you're not religious, most folks understand there's a greater power in the universe. Some people call it God. Some people call it the power of the universe, the universal consciousness, whatever. But we'll play this song for you, and that'll be our little New Year's present for all peoples. It's a little historic number, and I think it represents some very important feelings. So, Happy New Year, and thanks for all of your support and kindness. It's more than appreciated.
I walk with God from this day on. His helping hand. My humble plea. Christ from